Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. If you're just tuning in, we're going over the week's news with a focus on local stories that went under the radar. Here with me in Studio 3 are WGBH's Philip Martin, writer and journalist Marcella Garcia, and Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson, the ever-colorful City Councilor Tito Jackson. Let's tackle something I had not heard about. The Bay State Banner wrote a piece about RoxComp. For a lot of people will know that institution as Roxbury Comprehensive Community Health Center, temporarily suspended its clinical operations this week. This is an organization, an institution that has been highly regarded and actually held up as a model, Tito Jackson, for many, many years. This comes as a great shock.
It does come as a great shock, but this is an organization that has needed a fix for a while. We actually have some good news. The director has actually stepped down, and we actually have new leadership there, an interim leader in Pratt Wiley. Who will be the interim leader. I think the objective here is to make sure that we are able to provide the most comprehensive and best service for the people in the area, of City of Boston as a whole, and Roxbury. And that was actually simply not happening. The state had to step in, the Department of Health stepped in to make sure that the facility that was dealing with their methadone, which is over on the Shattuck campus, that was done in a proper way, and that actually has happened. And I think it is a smart thing for their clinical operations to actually stop. There was a portion where they missed payroll. And so let's put a pause on and make sure that we are able to get the best care possible for the folks in that neighborhood. So I think with the transition and the fact that the board is now being reconstituted, we're actually moving in the wrong direction after having had several issues along the way.
So is this an isolated scenario, or is this some problem that may impact other community health centers?
No, so these centers are actually run on an individual basis. And so each one has their own board, and then there's a great deal of control. And we've seen several centers either do very well and some who've had issues over the course of time. And in this regard, I think it is not a systematic issue. It's actually dealing with the issue at RoxComp. And I think we, again, my feeling is there's no thought of any real closure. It's actually reconstituting the center, doing what's going to be right for the people in that neighborhood and community. And I would note that there is a very, very great group of people who've held on through these difficult times, and the staff that's there. They've actually contacted my office prior to this and have actually really held on through these difficult times. Mm. So I think there's a good base of a team there. Now they need to have the administrative infrastructure to be able to move forward.
Philip, this is a venerable institution. I mean, I know we have a lot of health centers in town, but RoxComp is a name that, you know, lots of folks know.
Well, that's right. It's venerable, and I agree with Tito. I think that the staff, some of the staff have been very, very diligent. They've worked hard to get through this, and so on and so forth. I think it's hard to get past, however, some of the problems that have occurred there. And we're talking about mislabeled lab samples, the use of expired medical supplies, failures to comply with various Medicaid and Medicare regulations. Some have pointed out the need for more centralized control, perhaps more rigorous state regulations, enforced regulations. And in the meantime, what's happening is that a lot of the patients are being sent to other health centers, including the well-regarded Mattapan Community Health Center. Mm. And that could serve as a model for other health centers, including the RoxComp. Everyone hates to make these juxtapositions because, as Tito pointed out, they're independently controlled. But I think if you have something that works, use it. And Mattapan Community Health Center, under Dr. Azza Young, has been exemplary in the terms of its growth and in terms of its impact on the Mattapan community, the local community.
And Marcella, you know, when we in Massachusetts these days, I think any of us as health consumers think if you hear about something being mislabeled, you know, any CC compounding center comes to mind. I mean, I think if there's ever a place where we're hypersensitive to these specific kinds of mistakes, I think it would be here.
Yeah, it looks like it's It's a good thing that this happened now, but it from the piece, from the piece in the banner, it's just clear that there were issues, and the employees had complained themselves. Yeah. So when you have the employees sending letters and describing just the state of things being terrible, then definitely there was some intervention needed.
So yeah, and the employees actually were purchasing stuff on their own. That's how much they cared. Right. And so
that's
the, again,
like teachers,
there, yeah, there's right. a there yeah. was, there was yeah. a base of goodwill and hardworking folks there. So the administration, the current administration, now has to step up and make that turnaround.
By the way, is Pratt Wiley related to Flash and Benny Wiley?
Yes, this is the son.
Okay,
and we've seen this, okay. and I will say, Harvard Street Community Health Center had some issues 3 years ago. Now, Chinua Achebe's son, Dr. Achebe, is there, and in a year and a half, they were able to turn around that center and take it from the red to the black, and I'm encouraged by that.
And as I put a button on this, we spend some time on this because these community centers are the life link for those communities where people get their health care. I was over in line getting my flu shot at one of them, so I know how critical they are, is why this is important. All right, Marcella, huge pieces everywhere, but I don't know that I haven't seen it highlighted about more than half of the immigrants in Massachusetts are legal.
Yes.
Not only legal,
but citizens.
Why do we need
citizen.
To say this?
Yeah.
You know?
Not only legal, but citizens.
That's right.
It's a huge distinction because being a citizen means that you can vote, that you can run for office, and it's half, actually it's a higher percentage of the national percentage. I think it's at 40-something nationally, but in Massachusetts, half of the immigrants, foreign-born population, which is almost at 1 million, are citizens. And these are recently released figures. It's very, very significant, specifically, or rather in the context of or where we are right now, facing possible comprehensive immigration reform passing and also, a lot of people, there was a report recently about how the higher costs of naturalization or getting a citizenship is about almost $700 now, compared to in the late 90s, it was only like less than $100.
It's really cost prohibitive.
Right.
It's really
right. Expensive. So there was all this talk among community groups saying that this was preventing people from getting their citizenship because, mind you, yes, there's half a million immigrants are citizens, but there's more eligible. Like there's as many as 300,000
who can't afford it.
Who are eligible, but they don't do it. And part of some of the reasons, or a big reason, might be the cost. It's $700. So it is significant again in the face of possible immigration reform coming, and it's good news.
Oh, excellent.
And a lot of this happened, of course, in 2011. That's when these 983,000 individuals, I think it's actually had taken the oath of citizenship. Mm. And don't forget, this was happening. This was happening as immigration, not reform, was being discussed, but sort of punitive anti
deportations and other kinds of.
That's right, and so I think folks were responding to what was happening around the country, Arizona, other places, Alabama, a very punitive response to undocumented individuals in the country. And so that's when you've seen that rush. And I think you'll see even more now, of course, now that immigration reform is being discussed. I think that there's sort of a sigh of relief on the part of many foreign-born people who basically had looked a few years ago and saw what was happening around the country are now saying, wow, now we are reaching a point where perhaps things are not as urgent.
And I think from the electorate aspect, there's a huge, huge power base here. In the state of Massachusetts, we found out when I was working for Governor Patrick, 75,000 Africans in the state of Massachusetts are citizens and are able to vote. Mm. So there was an organization formed in the African community. I think it's really important that when we were speaking about, quote unquote, this issue of citizenship, we're also speaking about the issue of civic engagement and how these citizens can not only come and be part of the economic process, but really shape the political process and shift continue the shift relative to a comprehensive reform across the board, but also how they can continue to impact and positively impact the electorate in many of these neighboring communities, including Boston.
Implied in that, of course, is that this 500,000 of 983,000 foreigners who took this the oath of citizenship, implied in that, what Tito just said, is how might they be voting? How might this affect Democratic, Republican, independent politics in Massachusetts? It would be curious to see.
Well, you've seen some of that in the past elections. I mean, I think you'll see more of that as it's coming up. I want to point out that the illegal folks who are undocumented number about 160,000 or 16%, according to the Pew Hispanic Center. But I also want to point out that I think what this report illustrates is that, once again, we are a nation of immigrants. And, you know, who and what these people are needs to be always thought about, because for all the reasons that you've mentioned.
Right.
I know that this is not a stat that most people thought was real.
Right.
And
here
it is in the real numbers.
Right.
I'm talking local news that went under the radar with WGBH's Philip Martin, writer and journalist Marcella Garcia, and Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson. So Universal Hub did a piece this week asking a central question that I know is very important to Tito Jackson. Can Boston do a proper Harlem Shake? And that's a reference to, wait a minute, I got to tell folks where it's a reference to. Everybody's not paying attention to this. There's a viral, all kinds of viral videos, similar to the sort of Gangnam style video viralness, not as many right now, where there's a techno music going on and the line goes, can you do the Harlem Shake? It turns out that the Harlem Shake is real and is a part of the culture of Harlem, the place in New York. The shake part that's on the viral video, not so real.
It is not real at all. And I know that radio is the theater of the mind, but I am going to attempt to do the real Harlem Shake, Callie.
All right, go ahead, Tito Jackson.
And we'll do our best to describe it.
Now, that is not how we see it on the viral video, I must say.
What we see in the video is not dancing,
first of all.
It's just people shaking as they were having a heart attack or something.
Right. Yes.
They
literally just said a shake.
Right.
I'd rather go back to Gangnam Style.
Me too.
They need to do the Harlem Shake. I know we're Boston, but we still need to be proper when we do the Harlem Shake.
Maybe you can go tomorrow and show them what you just showed us here.
Yeah, I believe on Universal Hub, is there?
Yes, they're trying to gather folks to, you know,
tomorrow.
To get them to
or
do
is it
a
today?
proper Harlem Shake. It's today at 12:40.
Oh, sorry, you missed it.
I think we missed it. But our point was we had to mention it because people here are determined to do that. Just need to give a little history about this Harlem Shake. It's kind of what's in the video is kind of a little shimmy move, and we note that they asked some folks outside of the historic Apollo Theater what they thought about it, and here is a great quote. It looks like they're making fun of it, said one resident, expressing a common sentiment. Like they just don't get what's going on. They were confused by what people were doing on the video. But it's very popular.
I actually don't think the folks who are doing it actually know what the Harlem Shake is.
I know.
Right.
So, I did not know until now. I actually
P. Diddy,
didn't know.
Mace, this is my high school, I'm sorry, my college years. Uh-huh. There was a song that actually made that, and it was actually a whole Harlem World movement that came through hip-hop. So I think there's a historical context that's not actually put in place. And in fact, what you're quoting from, Callie, I saw the video, and every single one, every person from young to old actually knew how to do the Harlem Shake in Harlem.
Because they know it.
All right, so one more time. So for those of us who don't know how to do it, it's really a dance. It's not just a shimmy. It's a dance. And Counselor Tito Jackson, who is a man of the people, is demonstrating it.
Now I know what it looks like.
And we are going to post it on our website so the folks at Universal Hub can see it done correctly. So I'm very pleased that you were here to be able to make that clear, because I was a little confused when I saw the video, though it's kind of a fun video.
I did not know what they were trying to do, and I think it's interesting that you point out how the historical context is missed. It's such a missed opportunity to go back to that.
Definitely, and we will not be doing the Callie Crossley version or mix.
No, we won't. No, the remix will not be happening here. It's always, I think, important to acknowledge folks who have passed on, who are at one time well-known names in this town, who a lot of people may not know. Such it is that Lavelle Diet, who was a radio personality here in Boston for many, many years, will have a memorial service tomorrow. He was 77 years old when he died not too long ago. Philip Martin, maybe you can shed a little light on who Lavelle Diet was.
Well, I've known Lavelle for many years. Let's first of all establish that he was a figure in Boston. He was on WBZ Radio, the Lavelle Diet Show. I wish I could imitate that beautiful deep voice of his, and he was, again, a presence on radio. He was a presence on television for a while. Programs on Channel 4 dealing with black culture and issues in Boston. In terms of his background, he was a graduate of Bethune-Cookman University in Daytona Beach, Florida, historically black college. He helped elect Edward Brooke to the U.S. Senate. Edward Brooke, the Republican senator, the first African American in the 20th century to be elected to the U.S.
From
Senate.
Massachusetts.
From Massachusetts, that's right. And he worked as an organizer in the campaign of Tom Atkins, who was Boston's first black counselor, something, of course, Tito Jackson, has carried on that tradition. Mm. And so Lavelle Diet, first of all, what an unusual name. What an incredible name. And he impacted a lot of people. His listeners were across the color spectrum, across the class spectrum. He survived Boston. When WBZ was changing, all the time changing, Lavelle Diet survived.
Right.
His talk show lived on.
Let me let Tito weigh in.
It's legend. He's a legend in the political space, but also in the leadership space of making things happen that hadn't happened before. Because folks don't realize, Deval Patrick's and President Obama's, there's a newness to that. Mm-hmm. And when we see the difficulties that folks had to go through back in the day, we actually just recently at the council named a room after Thomas Atkins, which is a really cool thing. So I actually get to host meetings in the Atkins room. Brothers like Lavelle Diet just really epitomize what you can do in spite of. What you can do in the face of, and I wouldn't be here, and there's many people in this generation who would not be here had it not been for legends like Lavelle Diet. And Callie, you actually are in that legendary class.
Thank you.
For me too.
I don't know
by the
about
way,
all that.
Callie, I got to mention she's not gonna toot her own horn, so I have to mention this. Wellesley University this week has named her, you know, a distinguished alumni. They are awarding her the Distinguished Alumni Award.
Now, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
Callie,
but
awesome.
I thank you all for really giving me your insight here today. I appreciate that. We've been talking about local news that went under the radar with WGBH's Philip Martin, writer and journalist Marcella Garcia, and Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson. Thank you all for
joining
me.
Congratulations, Callie.
And thank you for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. You can find us on the web at wgbhnews.org/BPR. I'm Callie Crossley. Have a great afternoon.